Today, we're going to talk about a project that has spanned 15 years throughout 15 countries, documenting the ritual and festival of Carnival. Let's go behind the shot. Hi, as always, welcome to Behind the Shot. I'm Steve Brazel. This is the show where we try and get inside the mind of a great photographer by taking a closer look behind one of their shots from conception to completion, all the stories and challenges that happen in between. Basically, the idea is to try and better understand why a photographer made the choices that they did. As always, there is a blog post associated with this episode. You can find it over at the website. It's behindtheshot.tv. As well, any links that we mention will be in that blog post. I write a little bit about my guest. I've got a small sample gallery of their work, you know, that type of a thing. As well, if you are watching on YouTube, down below the like and subscribe button, you will find all the links we talk about. It's not the entire blog post there, but a lot of the stuff that we talk about will be there, anything that you're going to need. And by the way, for those of you that are on YouTube, a lot of people look at the poster and go, I just want to get to that. That's okay. I start my shows the same way every time, a little bit getting to know my guest. Like, why do you need to listen to this person? What are their credentials? What's their experience? Who are they? And then we get into dissecting the photograph. If you don't want to hear that part, there's timestamp chapter markers on YouTube. Jump to wherever you would like. Absolutely okay with that. So let's get started. Please welcome to the show editorial and documentary photographer Jason Gardner. Jason, how are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show, Steve. Great to be here.
It's nice to finally meet you. We have a mutual friend. That's how we got connected. Ian Spanier. Yes. Now, yep. Ian's been my friend for many, many years. He's been on the show many, many times. How do you know Ian?
I grew up with him. Since we knew each other since we were kids, in the small town of Hastings-on-Hudson, where I am right now.
So for those of you that have not seen shows with Ian, definitely go check them out. Ian, to me, he's a Westcott pro and just a brilliant, brilliant photographer. He does a lot of celebrity stuff. He does a lot of fitness stuff, teaches a lot of workshops, things like that. But phenomenal photographer. You shoot stuff completely different than Ian. Right. It's interesting. Yes, you grew up together and you're both photographers. He does the fitness and celebrity portrait type stuff. On your website, you've got galleries for editorial and events and personalities and lifestyle. Plus, today we're going to talk more documentary type stuff. None of those connect, right? How do you, when somebody looks at you and says, oh, you're a photographer, what do you shoot? Does it take you 10 minutes or is there a summary version you've figured out?
No, there's a through line insofar as, well, number one, I mean, one of my taglines is visual anthropology, which is kind of, we can talk about that a little bit later, but that connects a lot to the Carnival work. But the through line is interesting personalities and some sort of spirit behind every portrait that I make. Some event work and commercial work is what I do a lot to make money in this sort of crazy editorial world. But I do have a few different buckets of what I do professionally in photography. Yeah. But the through line is me and my vision. I mean, even if I'm photographing a kind of corporate lawyer or whatever, I'll look for that one thing that I can remember them by and I can hopefully bring out in the photograph.
You said something that was intriguing to me because it connects to what we're doing today. You said, you know, I photograph the spirit of people. I'm paraphrasing. I can't remember the exact words you used.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting word choice, as you understand, because the topic we're going to get into today relates to your second book, which is We the Spirits. So as you're photographing people, we'll talk about the book here in just a second. Mm-hmm. But I want to dive into that. I want to kind of explore the idea of the spirit of somebody. How do you, as a photographer, people get in front of a camera, they're not comfortable. So when you're photographing that corporate lawyer or somebody from We the Spirits, how are you getting that spirit out of them?
That's a good question. I mean, I think I approach that in a few different ways, and they may layer upon each other or they may be mutually exclusive. What I mean by that is in order to, just in general, when you're photographing someone or a thing, but primarily someone, you need to connect with them in some way, whether it's understanding what they're about, making a joke if they're really not feeling comfortable, or doing everything you can to show that you are kind of bring out the best possible image for them. If that means taking one of those rollers and cleaning them, you know, all over. Right. Maybe they're not dirty, but maybe you clean them anyway. You know, this is like small tricks in the corporate world just to show that you're kind of invested in the best possible image for them in the time that we're together. For photographing carnival things is slightly different because in a way, often they're masked. So you're not really seeing the human behind it. And so you're trying to get the energy of what that costume represents. And so to some extent it's, you know, it's falling in love with every costume and every sort of manifestation of these characters and, you know, working with it to get the best possible angle and moving yourself and making yourself more flexible so that they can stay where they are. And you can get a great shot from that perspective. And sometimes if I'm photographing a big shot CEO and they have exactly 8.5 seconds or a famous musician backstage and they don't have that very much time and maybe their publicist told them we have to do the shot for this magazine, but they don't really care, is if you know you have a very short time, do a lot of research on the person. Find the two or three things that may not be obvious. I can think very directly talking about music. When I was starting out in 2007, I had to photograph Manu Chao, who back then was not very well known in the United States. Now he's a lot bigger internationally. And the editor said, I don't know how much time you're going to get. He may come out in a clown suit and he may not even want to deal with it, but just go with it. And I did a lot of research. I'd actually seen him in Brazil a few years before. And true to form, I had about 2.5 minutes and he came out, he was kind of like in space. He's like, what are we doing now? And the first thing I did to talk to him, I talked to him in Portuguese. I said, I saw you in Brazil 2 years ago. I know you played a great gig in Fortaleza. And he's like, oh, okay, you're cool. All right, where do you want me? So like I differentiated myself from a random photographer saying, oh, I need a shot, right. You know, and then it was fine after that.
Yeah, a great tip. And it's the same for anything you're photographing. If you know your subject, it makes life easier. I'm a music photographer as well. And so, you know, knowing who it is, what it is, what makes them tick will change how you shoot them. But let's go to We the Spirits, because as I mentioned, the shot we're going to talk about today relates to the documentary work that we're going to talk about, relates to your second book, We the Spirits. And it's interesting, too, because I said carnival, and you said carnival. Is there an accepted pronunciation, or do both work?
Carnival is the American way to say it. Carnival is more Italian, so I think you have Italian background. Maybe that's how you end up saying it. It's a, you know, the same word for nearly everything. It's fine. Okay. Either one's fine. In fact, the word carnival, just to set the tone, it's a little bit weirdly what's the word? It's easy to photograph carnival and difficult at the same time. What I mean by that is it's easy because the costumes are so beautiful, right? And they're very visual. But it's difficult because a lot of people photograph carnival, right? And there's a lot of street photography of carnival. And so it becomes, how do you differentiate yourself a little bit? The word, that's just one point that I'll get to with the shot we'll analyze and talking about the rest of the project. But in terms of the term carnival, it's sort of become a little bit of a misunderstood word, because it's really what I'm photographing is the winter masquerade, which is a larger season from Epiphany, January 6th, the Day of the Kings, until Lent, right? So that's about 6 to 8 weeks, depending. So it's not just Mardi Gras, that Fat Tuesday. That's the culmination of that whole winter masquerade season, which has allowed me to photograph in 15 countries, you know, 40 or 50 different rituals and festivals. And that's what made up the book.
And here's the book cover right here for We the Spirits. So now I understand a little bit more about the project itself and about carnival, but obviously, like the shot we're going to talk about today isn't in this book, but it is carnival, right? So
correct.
The book is a subset of the images that you've taken documenting this event that happens worldwide. So how do you describe the book? I mean, what right. Tell me about the book.
Well, it's easy. Yeah, the book is a fine art monograph of portraits, mostly done with film, 99% done with film, medium format film, square. of these traditional ritual pagan characters of the Winter Masquerade. And I differentiate between the Winter Masquerade and Carnival only because of the stereotype that a lot of people think in Carnival. They think Mardi Gras in New Orleans, they think Rio, they might think Venice, which are all carnivals in their right, but they're quite big produced, very, very well visited and very touristed. The carnivals and the masquerades that I visited, I tended to focus on small town, esoteric, in the middle of nowhere, no other visitors, but very ritual and very ancient celebrations that still are happening in modern day.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, so there's so much here I want to unpack. It's killing me. You just touched on the phrase ancient civilizations. And you mentioned this phrase before, actually, visual anthropology. Your Instagram account is Visual Anthropology One. And on your website, you see the phrase visual anthropology a few times. And I love the connotation that brings into my mind. Why visual anthropology to you? Where'd that come from?
Well, it came from one of my photo editors early on, when I was photographing news and Wire and stuff. And I took a very sort of anthropological approach of not just the portraits, but the details, the sort of what's called just the scenes, the places where they worship, all the little things that made up a culture, maybe one sequin or one, the way they're fixing this costume, not just the portrait, not just the action on the street. So that's kind of how I, overlook it. I'm not an anthropologist by nature, but I needed to, and start with my Brazil project, the first Brazil work I did. And then it bled into this photography project of We the Spirits, is that I needed to know about each thing I was photographing enough to see what was relevant and photograph that, but not so much to be the expert on it. I'm not the expert on carnival. I got the expert on European carnival to write an essay in my book. Like that, he did the macro on the sociological over 5,000 years of carnival. But I find myself in my exhibitions, in my editorial, in conversations like this, being that kind of bridge between this crazy ancient ritual that they do now, and the viewer. And so often there's extended captions, a couple sentences on, and there's field notes in my book from me for each place. And I found in general, how people connect with my work is they first see the image of the portrait or the thing on the street and say, wow, it's crazy costume. What is that? And then it becomes, what does it mean? Right? Where's the significance to the community?
Right.
And the third level is kind of, what does it mean to these people specifically? And to cover that, I did a lot of interviews directly with them. Often I have to translate and then transcribe it because it's in Sardish or Galician or something. I have no idea what they're saying, but they're kind of telling me things. And I include that in the book as well, for some, first person interviews on what it means to them. And they often say things like, when I wear this mask, I can never die. When I wear this mask, I connect to 10, 100, 1,000 generations before me. And that rolled up to, what was the overall sort of theme I saw? Why do they put these masks on? What's the reason? It's not just a party and to get drunk and have fun. That's like the very, surface level. But it's really honoring the spirits, right? It's honoring their previous generations. It's honoring the cycle of the seasons, transition from winter to spring, and seeing and showing some both sides of the human condition, the dark and the light, the chaos and the order, the beauty and the ugly. It's a very dualist theme.
So, which is why to me, when I first saw visual anthropology, it clicked to me because I get that, right? I understand the idea of we stand on the shoulders of those that came before us. But personal projects like this are always interesting to me. Nobody I know, right? Personal project didn't help me, said no one ever, right? Personal projects change people and change their craft. So, obviously that could be a show on its own without going too deep. What is it about a personal project like this one? How does a personal project like this one help you from a craft point of view?
I think from a craft point of view, yeah, that's a good question. Both of these books have been personal projects that have evolved into book projects that have helped me to be on a different playing level, on a different stage, and people see that I do sort of like deeper, profound work, not just photographing a rock star or a CEO or anything like that. How it's helped me from the craft is, you know, I think from book one to book two, this book has been shot, as I said, primarily on film, which is one way I've differentiate from the rest of the carnival photographers out there in the clusters, kind of bang, 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 bang.
Right.
This is a Mamiya 6 rangefinder. It's very slow. And to some extent, I also follow the process of not ever interrupting the ritual, right? So I often go days before I talk with them and kind of set up and find understand the day or the days that will unfold. And then I'm often photographing them right before they leave or right after they leave, you know, right after they come back, right at their finish or in, right. in a break. I say, let's go over here and we'll take literally 30 seconds and just go. And, but it's a slow process. So, you know, we're going to make everything right. And we're going to make sure the wall is beautiful and like throw away the garbage from here and like do all the little things to kind of prepare the scene and then put them in there. So how has it improved my craft? I mean, I think just because it's film and there's not a lot of room for error, I'm shooting on 100 ISO Provia slide film. So the gamut there is like super tight in terms of stops, right? It's only one up or one down. You can't really mess up. I chose to keep all of it in a certain similar lighting and compositionally while showing the environment of the place, not so many blank walls. I could have brought a seamless and four lights and an assistant, right. but it'd be a different feel altogether. And that's what it kind of allowed me to sharpen and really get it down the sort of point of view to a certain way. So go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, because looking at them for me from the outside in, they're very technical environmental portraits.
Yeah.
And that's what I think draws somebody into not just the costume. It draws them into everything the costume is about, because you're not in a studio with a seamless with, you know, four different lights going off. It's much more, it's documentary to me. Yeah. And
if you did with a seamless and lights, it would be all about the costume, not anything about the place. So it would just strip out that stuff. So I wanted that. I also don't shoot with lights, only with ambient light. So I tend to find a kind of shadier spot. But on purpose, I shoot with slide film because it's more saturated in terms of the color. But it's also in slightly lower light, in overcast light, it's a little grittier. It has a lot of grain, even though it's a slide film, for lack of a better word, you know. And I feel like that all rolls up to me thinking about carnivals, for lack of a better word, in that it's largely an analog process, right? This is not something that you can really experience live streamed from your phone. You know, you have to be there, you have to get dirty and smelly and uncomfortable, you know? And so to some extent, I think some of that comes through with the choice of media and the sort of structure or the sort of technical stuff that I've chose to execute these images with. But the book is only portraits. And it comes from 15 years of traveling around. Every carnival, every masquerade that I have photographed, I've done photojournalism that allows me to sort of follow the parade, understand the points, and to learn about the ritual more. And that helped me also for the editorial side. But my publisher and I, which is Ghost Books in the UK, we made a very specific decision to do only portraits, because that is a little bit more, it's more focused and strong, and it's really for the fine art world.
Okay. So, and a lot of your work has been displayed you know, not just this work, but a lot of your work has been displayed in exhibitions and places. And I do want to mention that images from We the Spirits will be on display again, or on display now, actually, April 6th through May 19th. It's at Ted and Noon Studio, 45 Main Street, Hastings on Hudson, New York. Okay.
That's in Westchester. So, it's an easy, for New Yorkers, it's an easy 45-minute Metro North train ride. And then it's 5 minutes from the studio, from the train station. Yeah.
So if you're in that area, go see this exhibition, go see these things live. Before we get into the shot, a couple of things I want to note just for people. And that is, first of all, if you are listening on audio and you want to see the shot, head over to the website, behindtheshot.tv. Everything is there. All the links we mentioned, the picture we mentioned. I approach this show first and foremost as a podcast. And so it is available wherever you get your podcasts, in audio only format if you happen to be driving, or there is a separate feed for the video of the show. Also, of course, the video goes up on YouTube. So if you're on YouTube, head on down. If you like the show, if you like the content that I'm doing, hit like, hit subscribe, drop a comment if you want to. And wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you know, whatever it is, drop a review if you would. It would be much, much appreciated. So for today's image, this one is not in the book, but the reason I find this image as almost a great summary of the project to me is because you've got the costume, you've also got the celebration, you've also got the mayhem and chaos that can ensue at something like this. And I looked this up in the EXIF data. The title of this is Burning the Mecco. Did I pronounce it right? Mecco?
Yeah, M-E-C-O, yep.
Okay, Burning the Mecco is this shot. And again, looking it up, doing a little research on this shot, it's from Galicia Introito, and I looked up the words. Galicia is an autonomous community in the northwest of Spain. Introito is what Galicians call carnival.
Yes.
So this is that region's carnival, Galicia Introito, correct?
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
And then Troito, and so Galicia is an autonomous, they have their own language that is similar to Spanish and Portuguese, with some different inflections. And they call Introito as their carnival because Introito is sort of like entering the beginning of the season, right? So
okay.
It's a seasonal thing. And burning the Mecco is the doll that they put up in the town for the bulk of the season of carnival. And that is supposed to be representing all the evils, right? All the bad things. They sort of, some other communities do this whole thing where they have a trial of the Mecco, and then they hang the Mecco, and then they burn the Mecco. But in many carnival and winter masquerade rituals, fire is super key in that represents the end of the carnival and the beginning of Lent. They're burning and cleansing and purifying. You're burning all the evils out and starting fresh for the spring.
So let's start with the technical. What camera lens did you shoot this with?
Good question. This is a Nikon 750 or 800. I don't remember. I'm going to look. It's on 1600 ISO. It is a 750 with a standard 24 to 70 lens.
Okay. 2.8. And you said ISO was 1600.
Yes.
It was, what's the rest of your exposure here? Shutter aperture.
This is 1/60th, 1/80th at f5.
Okay. So 1600 ISO, f5, 1/80th of a second, manual mode, I'm assuming. White balance was, I'm guessing you probably normally just leave it on auto. You're shooting raw, I'm sure.
It's definitely raw. I shoot zero JPEGs ever in my career.
Okay.
So I don't know what the white balance was. I think it was probably on auto or later.
So there's so many things I want to talk about on this shot. And I mentioned to you in the green room before we started recording that there's two or three things that I find captivating about this shot. I think this is such a quintessential shot for the type of subject that you're shooting. So for those of you on the audio feed, there is no way in hell that I can completely describe this shot. I would be here for an hour, right? Pointing out all the little intricate details, but I'm gonna try and paint a picture in your head for the audio feed people, and we'll see how far I get with this. Imagine an old Frankenstein-like movie where the villagers go out and go after the monster with burning pitchforks. That's the feeling that you get here. You have villagers holding these long wooden poles that are covered in straw, and the ends of the pole are on fire. And I don't mean like, okay, it's a sparkler. No, I'm talking fire. Yeah. A lot of fire, a lot of smoke and sparks. And what I love about this, I'm going to draw on this as I do it because I think it'll make more sense. The poles make center frame, actually a little left of center. The poles make this perfect leading line pyramid shape to the person, not person, but to the entity that they are burning with all of this flame. And when I say entity, here's what I mean. At the end of the poles, there is a straw man. He's wearing a suit and tie, a white shirt, gloves. He's even got boots on. Completely engulfed in flames. I will tell you, when I went through your website, I instantly wanted to talk about this shot. And then after we picked it, I started second guessing it because part of me was afraid that people would see it, not realize that this guy looks so real that people would think it was troubling, right? Not realize that this was a show and that this was not a real person. So picture that in your head if you're driving.
That does make it striking. Yeah, that just feels like a human.
If you don't look at the face, you don't know it's not.
I've got a few comments, but yeah, you finished the analysis, and I'll add in a couple.
Okay, perfect. For you. So in the back right corner, through smoke, you see villagers. Bottom right corner, you see more villagers. In bottom right corner, they're not distant. The depth of field isn't affecting them. They're completely clear. There's even one person there holding a camera. And what strikes me most about this is to me what makes this shot. The color temperatures. Around the fire is gold. It's very, very warm, right? The mid-frame shows people further away, and that's in a cooler blue tone away from the fire in the distance. And there's a bright light up high. A third of the shot is dark night sky up at the top, but again, warm, right? It's chaos, it's horror, it's celebration, all at the same time. And just to cap it off, there's a little teeny bit of a Dutch angle to add some energy and some pensiveness to the shot. Right? But the color temperatures, the fact that there's smoke coming across the top right-hand side, and there's this little teeny window that you see blurred in the distance from depth of field, people in the back that are a completely different color temperature. That to me makes this shot. Did I miss anything?
No, you got a lot of that stuff. In fact, you picked up a couple things that I didn't realize about it. So that's always cool. One of my favorite aspect, the thing that made me make this a select is if you look at his ankle, all the way in there, you can see that his foot is burning off. It's like literally right. About to come off. And that's, and also the angle of his whole body. And he's got this tie and he's got this lapel of a magnolia or some sort of carnation on the lapel. This also represents probably maybe about 10 seconds between they started to burn him and then the configuration became too fiery and smoky to photograph. And so, like, you know, looking at the frames before and after, that was the shot of being able to see it in just the transition point between still being kind of human-like and consumed with flames.
Yeah, it's there is so much, again, to me, and so I've said this on this show before for people that have been listening for a long time. I'm not normally a fan of Dutch angle. Like, I have a little bit of OCD. And so when I photograph a drummer, if there's an angle, I have to level out that damn drum riser. I wish I could do it sometimes. But when it's used for what I would argue was the intent of it, right? When it's used, I don't want to use the word properly, but in a way that helps tell a story. A Dutch angle is an amazing tool. And here, that slight tilt emphasizes his legs are vertical, but his body is leaning over, that his arms are limp. There's so much here visual anthropology-wise, right? And
well, also, when, in that intermediate point, like the doll was totally vertical up until the very last point when it got burned, then it just fell over, like sort of keeled over half. So that's only one frame in between, and then it falls apart.
I mean, it's the perfect frame. I'm curious, composition-wise to me, there's so much working here with the pyramid of leading lines slightly off-center so that it's just not just dead center is deadly, slightly off, the fire poles doing leading lines pointing it at this caricature that's on fire, the warm and cool together, you know, warm up front, warm at the top, even in the dark black smoke, but the cool color in the back. By the way, the colors, when I first saw that bluish hue in the back, but the warm goldenness of the fire up front, what struck me was it's dodging and burning, really, but it's dodging and burning with color, drawing the viewer to where you want them to go through the shot, not drawing the viewer just to the subject, but drawing the viewer through the shot into the back from a composition point of view. Because clearly, by the way, you even have people in the bottom right corner as kind of like an anchor, right? From a compositional point of view, as you're framing this, what are you thinking? Are you shooting wide with the intention to crop? Are you framing it in camera? Are you aware of the color temperature differences? Are you aware of those people in the distance that you can see because the smoke isn't thick there? What's going through your head compositionally?
So let me, before I answer that, or in answering that, let's go back about the 80,000 foot view. This is a ritual that was not very publicized, and it's known for being the last day of carnival when they burn the Mekko, but it's in a little teeny village. It's not like, you have to kind of know and you have to kind of get there. And of course, no one tells you what's going to occur, right? All I knew is that they're going to burn a doll at some point. And so there was a procession of the doll carried on someone's head, and they had these fires in the procession, not burning him, but like sort of tiki torches. And then at some point it got to this point and they all started torching it, and people were walking around a circle. So I need to walk around the circle with them. And so it's really about selecting the moment when you could get a decent shot of it amidst all this smoke and fire, which, you know, obscured it often. So I right away made the decision to go wide because I didn't want to just dial into just the doll being burned. I wanted to show these spikes that were burning it,
right,
and the people that were adhering. But after that, to be honest, it's kind of, I don't want to say spray and pray, but you kind of just shoot what you can. I wasn't looking at the different color, those blue and greens of the, that's a happy accident to be brutally honest. But I did want to show the environment, right? So it wasn't a conscious choice, the color temperature, just how it played out. But it did, that came out in the edit, looking at it afterwards, you're like, oh wow, there's this other thing, you know, and that shows me that. But in the shooting process, I knew I wanted to go wide. I didn't think about the Dutch angle. I just wanted to get it at a, you know, sort of bizarre, you know, standpoint or approach, not just the straight up, straight, because it was, you know, and carnival is transcendent. You know, it's in between time. It's not, the rules don't apply, you know, black is white, up is down, when men dress like women, people burn things. So all that rolls up to, you wanted to instill a little bit of the chaos and the kind of otherness of it.
The pensive energy that gives, but again, the color temperatures to me that pull me. And the other thing is the smoke is completely the top third of the shot. There's only that little window to the background, really. I mean, you can see some people through the smoke, the warm smoke on the left, but that little window on the right is just this tunnel that you come through the fire and then back through the right. It's so, so amazing. But here's the thing. Capturing this, physically shooting this shot, is difficult for obviously the reasons that you mentioned, but I'm just talking the technical side. So Photographing concerts, I deal with fire a lot. Exposing for fire is hard when done well.
Good point.
Because if you expose for this, like for me, when I shoot a band on stage and Godsmack's got a ton of fire behind them and Sully's on the front of the stage. And often Sully, if I expose for the fire so that the fire doesn't clip and I get the detail in each of those, you know, cannon shooting fire out, then Sully is completely, the lead singer, Godsmack, is completely shadowed. If I expose for the lead singer, the fire is so blown out that there's no way to recover it. If you try and recover highlights on that, they just turn gray. So exposing for this, especially when you get one frame with him bent over like this, you got to be spot on, but you even got the sparkles, the you know, embers going up. The flame is.
I love the embers too. Yeah, that a makes lot more energy. Yeah, good point.
You know, that shows you the heat.
Flash, but I didn't use flash. I might have gotten lucky. I know people don't like to say it because it looks like there were people using flash. I choose not to, but it's not like a concert where you can use flash. But in that case, there was some strange, I think I used the sub fires, the fires below the main fire, as a lighting. You know, it kind of lit it frontally. See, like there's the main guys being, the main doll is being lit.
Right.
But there are
his face is lit up
underneath. Yeah. So, but this is a few years ago, so I don't quite remember, but I knew it was a special moment.
But as you're going into this and you see the fire, obviously your mind is, oh my God, I don't want to clip this to death, right? I don't want to overexpose this. Are you thinking obviously it's fire. There are some areas that are, I wouldn't even say they're clipped because they still have color in them. That's very interesting, this fire. But the person, the fake person, is the face is warm and clear. What are you, as you're setting your exposure for this, what is your goal in your head? Do you want to try and get it all? Are you thinking I only care about the subject? Because you've got an instant to calculate this, right? Are you, I just want to make sure I don't blow out the face on this doll?
All good questions. I think knowing that what I knew about the differential between the fire and the darkness, right? And wanting to, you make the decision to expose for fire for sure. And you hope that the fire lights up his dark suit enough so it's not so much of a differential. That's, I think, the max of what I was calculating when I was running in between these frames. You know, at a certain point, you do have to frame what you can based on what, you know, in order to photograph, I needed to stop for a hot second, literally a hot second, and people were running around me. So you have to find those spaces in between the people too. And so a little bit is just all the elements. You get a lot of frames and you hope some good frame, you get some good frames out of it, just to be, I guess, humble. I don't know how else.
Let's be honest. You captured what I would consider, I've never been to Carnival. This tells me the story that I want to go, right? I mean, this one shot documents and tells the story the way that I would want it to be told to me. When you're done with this, you bring it up, like you said, you weren't aware of the color difference so much, the color tonal white balance type differences between the front and the back until post. What is your normal post-processing workflow?
I use 99% Lightroom for the digital, you know, which I started doing Bridge before there was Lightroom. So I'm just used to that
right.
So workflow using Adobe Camera Raw. What's my workflow? It's very interesting. I mean, I pull it in, immediately rename based on year and place, because it is how it has helped me when I send files to both editorial and fine art galleries. They know where it is right and what year it was shot right away. Let's see. Yeah, I add metadata of with the caption and all that stuff. And I have an extensive, I mean, my Carnival archive is 15 plus years, 40 or 50 at least festivals, if not more, you know, 200,000-300,000 photos. So you have to kind of really be rigorous in how you organize. And so I have a process there of splitting within each territory, the photojournalism and the portraiture, but keeping it all within the same naming structure.
So
I hope that helped.
That makes total sense. When you get down to the
individual image, yeah, it's just using those. You know, I don't do I go like a traditional darkroom. I will do cropping and I will do color balancing, but I won't retouch things out. I won't take out a tree or take out a,
okay. You know. So you're journalistic in your approach.
Yeah. Journalistic. I mean, yeah, I will, but, you know, journalists crop, but I just won't like remove items, you know, like I would have loved to remove, you know, to some extent this, a pole or an extra branch, but I don't mind it in this case, but.
And normal in photo competitions and stuff, a lot of times the phrasing is you can color correct, crop, dodge and burn. Those are,
yeah,
that's pretty those are universally journalistic acceptable. Every outlet has a different thing. Aside from Lightroom, are there any other apps that you couldn't live without?
I mean, Photoshop, of course, but
okay.
That's about it.
Is there anything in Lightroom? What might you have done to this?
I don't know. I'm not looking at the actual file and to see the history, but I'm sure the first and last thing was the highlights. You know, I'm sure I brought in some highlights to get more flame detail. That seemed like the very first thing. Yeah,
it really, honestly, this thing is.
And then
just...
you play with the darks and you play with the contrast to make sure the suit is nice and dark, but has a. There's a nice thing too if you drill all the way in on his shoulder. You can see he's backlit and you have that, I think it's his, if he's facing us, his left shoulder. I don't know. You could probably draw it, but you could see that separation between the night sky and that's it.
Yeah. Let me go full screen on it so people can see it. If you're on YouTube, you'll see this if you're on the video version of the podcast, but right here, you've literally got a halo, like this wonderful, corona of light coming through him that is just so, so well done. Really, yeah, honestly,
that same halo on his ankle that's burning too. You can see that halo. I'm just looking at it again now. Actually, it's funny. That same corona of the, it's not corona, is not the right word. When the light is going right in your lens, cannot remember what it's called.
Like a refraction type thing.
Yeah. And that's coming off his, that elbow that's burning.
It is such a great shot. And again, for me, it's the compositional structure that pyramid is slightly left of center to allow for that. I'm going to use the word intentionally here, to allow for a portal, almost in a TV show, sci-fi TV show portal, into a different world that's existing through this portal that's cooler in the background. This shot is just so damn good. I just love it. Is there anything else that people should know about this shot?
I think the only other thing to know more ethnographically is that, again, fire is an important part of a lot of end of carnivals. And on the very traditional ones, sometimes it's a, you know, like a Wicker Man type 20 foot high doll that's just burned like from the ground up. Sometimes it's just a certain character that represents all the evils. But I often end like my photojournalism slideshow with this type of image because that's a good ending. It's the sort of demarcates the end of the festivities.
It's so good. I really appreciate your walking us through how this came about.
No problem. It's fun. Yeah, it's awesome.
So we're going to switch gears. Speed round time. I'm going to hit you with a couple of questions. Whatever comes to your head, that's the answer.
Okay.
Your top editorial or documentary photography tip?
Top editorial and documentary tip. Do the research. Know what you're doing. The more research you can do in advance for getting in whatever situation, the farther along you will be in photographing anything.
Top lifestyle photography tip. And I include this one because, folks, you need to go look at his portfolio. Your lifestyle work is fantastic. Top lifestyle photography tip.
I would say, I don't really, no one's really asked me that in that way. So you threw me a curveball there, but I like it. I mean, lifestyle to me is more about the vibe, right? And I say that so general. What does that mean? That means capturing and also understanding, you know, the environment, the what's going on and what feeling you're trying to convey. And I could even port that over to from lifestyle to music portraiture, which I know, Steve, you're an acclaimed music photographer. I don't do a lot of live like you do. I don't know how you do that. But when I do
first music of all, photography, you use the word acclaimed, which is completely wrong, but I'll take it. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
When I photograph musicians, yes, you want to make a good technical portrait, but you want to show the vibe, the lifestyle, the what they're trying to, you want them to connect them with their audience, right? And so I'm always asking musicians and my portrait clients, you know, I photograph the why, not the what. Like, what are you trying to say? And why are you, why would they be interested in you as an artist and a musician? And often they can't answer that directly. And I say things like, well, are we talking gritty? Are we talking clean? Are we talking urban? Are we talking rural? Are we talking, right. With the words to get around, to get to what they're thinking, that all goes to the vibe and the lifestyle. And then it comes down to, and I think this is more of a tip for when you're trying to create images for a client, not necessarily for the photojournalism, capturing the scene of the thing, and not necessarily, and it may go into the editorial, but it's kind of like, and when I ask musicians, they often are like, I don't know, I just want something cool. Well, what does that mean to you? I have to get right in their head. And so sometimes I say, just send me 10 photos that you like, 10 portraits you like, not, and maybe why, or 10 photos that you don't like, you know, gets me an idea of the vibe of where they're going. And some of them couldn't even do that because they're like, I'm just looking through magazines, I don't understand. Then I said, okay, send me 5 album covers you like. And they sent that to me in about 8 seconds because that's the language that they speak. So maybe distilling that advice is get the vibe for lifestyle and then understand what language your subjects or your client or the environment will be speaking and you know, speak that language.
And by the way, if anybody thinks in album covers, which I grew up with physical albums, right? I'm older, and so I had vinyl, right? The documentary Hypnosis, Squaring the Circle, is phenomenal if anybody is looking for a good documentary to watch. Next question. Biggest photo mistake you made or almost made?
Biggest photo mistake? Even thinking about this project, We the Spirits, was in the beginning, in starting it, not taking enough notes as to where this was and what it meant and what's the name of that character. In the beginning, I shot the character. I was like, oh, beautiful. Next, you know. And then I found myself, I went through the pain of when I was doing the book, and it was a very structured way. I had to go back to people in the community and say, okay, that I shot 8 years ago, what was the name of that character? And what does it mean? And, you know, there's double work and a little painful. So it's probably and it was a good learning for the next project. I definitely will not be as cavalier in the beginning as towards, you know, getting notes and seeing where it all fits together.
Favorite composition rule, if you have one.
Don't really have one. I mean, I'm a little school. I like the rule of thirds, but I like knowing and feeling it when you can break them, can break that rule, you know, call it a rule of eighths, you know, it doesn't have to be a rule of thirds in the very traditional sense, but I like it because you have to know it. And I remember as a photo student, sort of having my mind blown by the fact that that existed, but not knowing it. And then so learning it and understanding how effective it was when you use it properly. But then also, now how some of the great photojournalists and artists, can casually break it.
Right. Favorite band or performer?
Oh, favorite band or performer. Now, I'm going to answer it twice. My favorite performer recently, that is one that you would know more, is Lucinda Williams, because I just saw her live. And she's quite an amazing catalog and life, because I just read her book. Favorite performer that you wouldn't heard of is my friend Corey Sesnick, who I've photographed many times, and he's very roots, blues, bluegrass, banjo. He's French-American, but he lived in Ethiopia, so he's got a lot of world music going on. And he's you know, kind of quietly being a genius, I think. And he photographs really well too.
Favorite drink?
Cold beer on a hot day, you know.
Favorite movie or TV show?
My favorite movie is Fletch, because I find it to be a great comedy, not very well known compared to the Caddyshack and the other more overt comedies. But I love it because it's head to tail, great lines and great comedy. There's no dead weight in there.
Yeah, Chevy Chase. Last question. Is there a photographer out there that you think more people should know about and follow?
I mean, yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot. If you're interested in more of the culture, you know, Roberto De La Torre is doing amazing work. He's doing similar work what I'm doing, but only in Galicia and deep, deep, deep. He's from there. He's done 10, 15 years of just one place, one area. And he does phenomenal work. Also film, Hasse. And he's a really nice guy. So yeah, that would be the one photographer off the top of my head who no one knows about and should.
So I will include links to him and everything else that we've talked about in the show notes at behindtheshot.tv, in the show notes on YouTube, down below the like and subscribe button. Jason, if people want to connect with you, and those of you that have been watching on video, I've been putting lower thirds up on the video with, you know, Jason's Instagram and Facebook and Twitter/X and LinkedIn and his website and everything. But for those on the audio feed, the easiest thing is to go to your website. Tell us, you know, what your website is and where people can see more of you.
My website is jasongardner.net, actually. And that's where you could order the book or prints or whatever from me. The Instagram is @visualanthropology1, the number one. And those are the two best places to get in touch. I mean, I'm on Facebook and X, less X than Facebook, but for sure. You can also email me if you like. I'm not afraid of email. Jason@jasongardner.net. Not a problem.
Again, I thank you so much for doing this. And by the way, if Ian Spanier is watching, Ian, thank you for connecting us. I got to get that out there first. But Jason, I really appreciate your taking the time to share your process.
Yeah, it was really great. And I appreciate you asking the questions that I have not gotten before, and also discussing an image that I don't normally discuss, because a lot of them are, the portraits are the ones from the book that get the main views. It's been fascinating, just to sum, the reaction of the public to my work, because it just came out in Europe in December and February of this year, around Carnival time, and Wall Street Journal covered it and got a whole big, you know, splash. But I find it interesting that people who I've never met before are ordering the book and connecting with the work. Largely a lot of people have been to a carnival before, but also people who are just interested in folklore and theater and puppetry. It kind of crosses over to a lot of different kind of worlds.
Well, again, your work's amazing. And those of you that are watching the show or listening to the show, this shot's fantastic. The shots that are in the book are absolutely fantastic. When you're out, you know, in the field shooting, I do want to show a couple of real quick behind the scenes. I meant to show these earlier and I didn't bring them up. But
oh yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
So where is this one at?
This is in Germany, last year actually. And it's an interesting, because this is a small village that's reinventing, or they're renewing their carnival traditions. These were hundreds of years old, and then in the 50s they stopped, and then up until the 50s, they had stopped for like 100 years. And they recently, the last 30 years, have been like reinventing and bringing it back. And so that was kind of a different story there. But this is in the middle of, and this is a Slovenia, the second one. And this is a hen. It's called a kurika. And it traditionally goes from house to house asking for eggs for good luck. So eggs, of course, are renewal, you know, fertility, and well, they're oval, so it's infinity.
And then, of course, the book, We the Spirits, you can get that through Jason's website. Jason, again, thank you so much for your time, man. I really appreciate it.
No problem. It was really fun. Thanks, Steve.
reminder that all the links we talked about, a small bit that I wrote about Jason, sample gallery of his work, those are all at the website. All you got to do is go to behindtheshot.tv. If you want to find me, it's at Steve Brazel, like the country Brazil, anywhere on social media. SteveBrazel.com is where you can go. But I'm on X, I'm on Mastodon, I'm on X Twitter, Blue Sky, Instagram is all at Steve Brazel. Or for the podcast, it's at Behind the Shot TV everywhere, except YouTube. It's just Behind the Shot, so you can go check it out on YouTube as well if you want to. To you, as always, thank you so much for watching. If you do like what you're seeing, hit the like and subscribe button on YouTube, wherever you're getting it as a podcast. Take a second, if you would, drop a review. 5 stars would be preferable, but you know, be honest, be you, be whatever you need to be. I appreciate it. And again, make sure you join us next time as we try and get inside the mind of a great photographer by taking a closer look behind the shot.